Church of God the Eternal presents What is the Natural Body? This is the number 3 tape in this series, and it will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
I started into this series on the body of sin. And when I went through that, at the same time, I explained to you that as a body has many members, we had to then take a good long look at those members in particular. Certain members are capable of a lot more sin than others, just the same as we are, in any human relationship. Some people, by nature, are capable of a lot more manifestations of human nature than others. Others, by nature, as the Bible says, do those things that are written in the law. So some people are just more placid, some people are more acceptable in certain ways than others are. The others have to fight harder. As I've said, I'm no prime example whatsoever of patience. And that comes primarily because I'm extremely aggressive and I just cannot stand for things not to get moving. And no matter what the cost is in human energy or whatever, I'm going to see that they move. That's just my way of doing things, and I guess I got that naturally. But now there are other things that don't bother me so much, but they probably bother you. Maybe you don't have the same problems that I do, that is, to the same degree. But we all have our areas of problems. Individual members. It's not nearly as much of a problem to me to keep my mouth shut, and to remain confidential about things, because I've done it all my life pretty well, and I scarcely ever, if ever, and that's why I have to condition it, because otherwise I'd be found to be a liar just sure as the world, but I scarcely ever have divulged a confidence. That's not a problem with me. Some people could not keep a confidence if life depended on it. Oh, sure, they'll say, no, I won't do it, but you won't get out of the room until they'll do it. So they have problems. Each one of us has our unique problematic areas. Now, it's foolish for us individually not to recognize our own strong weaknesses. Now, that's a paradox if you ever heard one. But we do have written within us powerfully certain weaknesses, and we must recognize them, for therein lies the element of confession. If we can't confess what we are, how in the world can we ever master it? We'll never see it. We'll never grasp it. We'll never really understand it. So we've got to see ourselves, not somebody else. We don't have time to work on anybody else. We have only sufficient time. Well, I don't even know that we have sufficient time, because the Bible says we'd better be redeeming the time, which means that you really don't have time. You'd better be working on the self. And you'd better come powerfully to grips with that self. So you've got to start looking at it. And I say this, brethren, because I want us equipped to make it into God's kingdom. The greatest satisfaction I'll have is to hear Jesus Christ in that day say to those of you whom I have known personally, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Let me assure you, that's going to be a joy no matter what happens in my life. I will not be vindictive or hateful. If you make it, I'm going to be awfully thrilled. And I want to hear it with every one of you. That would be the most pleasurable melody that I will have ever heard in my life, and I've heard some pretty ones. It's for that reason that I say the things that I do, not out of vindictiveness, hatefulness, nor personal vendettas, but because I want you in God's kingdom. So we need to take a look at ourselves. It's for that reason that I am giving this series on this body of sin with its members in particular. So the last time we dealt with these natural ears, we went all the way through that, ears that like to hear things. It never seemed to be satisfied. We just loved to hear the juicy gossip and the tidbits about other people and so on. But that's why I said, then I came to the conclusion that it was essential for me to now give you a series on what those ears are supposed to hear. You know, God gave us ears to hear, and then he gave us the choice. We can choose what we hear and determine how much of it we're going to receive. So it is necessary for me now to give a series on the right usage of all these organs or members of the body. So I am going to give that. Then we got into this matter of the natural eye. And so we saw that it is naturally blind to truth. We can't see, we do not grasp, we do not understand by nature. We found that the eye is deceptively perverse. Now, that is not only true from the element of truth, but how do you think magicians operate? They know the cleverness of the eye, and they know how to exploit it. So what you think you're seeing, you're not seeing at all. But if we were sufficiently naive, we'd believe that they cut the woman in two. However, strangely enough, she comes walking from behind the curtain or something later on. And so everybody is mystified by it. Well, it was just a trick of sight. But it shows how deceptive eyesight can be. Because you don't always see everything that you think you see. And what you didn't see could fill volumes. I gave you the illustration of insurance reports. If you think the eye is not influenced by the emotions, you got another guess coming. For two people standing in the same spot or close to the same spot and looking at the same accident, any similarities are purely coincidental. That's right. And both of them were looking at the same accident or the same set of circumstances. Why is it that we don't see exactly the same thing? Because the brain interprets what you think you see. And the brain is given influence and motivation by the heart, which is the seat of emotions. And you think you're objective? Well, the first admission in life is that we are as blinded, as calloused, and as one-sided as it is possible to be. Now you're making some strides when you get to that point. And then you can go on. But that's exactly where we stand. But also the eye critically observes. Why, it'll take a look at everything, you know. Why, I was standing right there, I saw it. I don't care what you stood and saw. What did the mind tell you that you wanted to believe? See, oftentimes we can't read it. We don't know the circumstances. Now, can you understand why human government is not possible? I have a very, very interesting quote from Thomas Jefferson that I want to use in human government sometime. I'll just give you the gist of it at the present time. I'll be using it later on. When he simply said that men cannot rule men. Men cannot rule men. Well, then why in the world did God give us government? Because he wanted men to finally come to that knowledge that he is absolutely incapable of ruling. He cannot rule in any given situation. It's always with bias. It is always with self-orientation, with prejudice. Invariably. He can't rule. Look at how many problems you have in a home. Because two people don't see eye to eye. And children look at parents and say, well, I don't see why they don't see what we see. I'll tell you, you have to work at establishing a home. And it's a lot more work than most people will ever realize because they don't work that hard at it. And they don't intend to. No, we critically observe. And because what we see is tainted, tarnished, and tempered by our own human carnality and our own experiences. We've got a terrible problem. But that's what conversion is all about. All right, let's go on now and see if we can understand a little more about these natural eyes in what we think we see. And then let's find out if that's what we really saw in due time. It's the eyes themselves are instruments of offense. Here in Mark 9, and let's notice verse 47. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. If thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. Well, now, you know, it's been very difficult for commentators to really evaluate that, because does that mean that you should literally reach up here, you know, and pluck the eye out and throw it away? No, that's not what it's talking about. What it really is talking about, I guess if you had to go to that extent in order to avoid becoming critical, maybe it would be better to enter in physically blind than to lose life everlasting because you can't control it. But he is uttering a spiritual principle here. If the eye is mechanically so defective, offensive, that it is shattering the capability, the harmony of the total body, as any physician would tell you, and who cares about what they think anyway, you better get rid of it. If it's so offensive and such a problem, get rid of the eye. It's like any, you know, if you have a gangrenous foot, what will they tell you to do with it? Well, rather than to destroy the whole body, get rid of the foot. And there are surgeons who use these very texts in the Bible to prove their point, showing that they only see the physical aspect of it and they don't even understand the spiritual. But it does make sense, doesn't it, if you have an offensive member that is ultimately, you can't cure it, it isn't going to right itself, you can't get, good life and vitality in it and so on, get rid of it. Humanly speaking. But that's not why we have a human body. Therefore, surgery is not justified on this basis, because God says that if we did the right thing, it's going to be taken care of anyway. That's the point of it. Now, all that is a matter of growth. And it's a matter of growth in faith. See, as I've said many times, I'm not nearly as concerned about people who accept certain things, operations or whatever they may be, as I am in the attitude that develops as a result of it. Oh, this is the way God does it. No, it isn't. That God had nothing to do with that. It may be the best for the present circumstances physically. God does not use such human instrumentalities. That's a concept of Satan. And it is absolutely wrong. Now, should we then say, no, I will not ever have one? Whatsoever is not of faith is sin. It's a matter of our growth. Now, are we so embarrassed to admit that we don't have perfect faith yet? Over the years, I've said, no, I'm not concerned with the other. That doesn't bother me. But only in how we handle it. As we grow and as we mature. I look back at many things in my life today. I wouldn't do them the same way. I hope I'm changing and maturing. If I did everything right from the day that I came to the knowledge of God's truth, I wouldn't have any need of growth, would I? So that's kind of ridiculous. Then why don't we become candid and admit where we stand? See, we want to leave one impression that we're already there in faith, and yet we will do things physically. No, I'd rather you just be honest and say, well, I don't know about my faith at this point. I'm not giving up, of course. But I will go on to perfection as God works with me and helps me. But I just don't have that strength of character right now. Then we're beginning. We've made some strides. If thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. It is better for thee to enter into the kingdom of God with one eye than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire. So certainly it's there for some reason. It means that our eyes can offend us. That is, if we can't control what we see and our reactions to what we see, it's better to be blind. And it has its broad spiritual connotations. So the eye is oftentimes extremely critical. It's offensive. And there are too many of us, I'm talking about the human race, I don't want to imply us here specifically, too many of humankind, if not all, who have eyes only to find some unique problem of others. You know, it always has always, over the years, amazed me at how many things I missed that other people saw within the church. Somebody's come, did you know so-and-so? No, I hadn't observed it. Why, it was right there, you know. You should have seen it. Well, as I said, that apparently is not one of my weaknesses because I'm not looking for them. Thank God. But there are so many that have critical eyes. They're just waiting to find a mistake or what they perceive to be a mistake. And then they can hardly wait until they find their friend or somebody else and isolate him and say, did you hear that? Did you know so-and-so? And there is another violation because we're going to get to that little mouth later on. It's an awfully hard thing to control. Awfully hard. No, I just don't see those things. I told you what mine is. I'm as impatient as they make them. And I don't say it gleefully. It's something I have to work on. But I have asked God never to remove it, never to remove the test until I learn. But others have other problems. One of my problems is not a critical eye. I just plain don't see it. Thank God, I don't want to see it. But I do have an eye, I think, that's wide open when it comes to a knowledge of what's in here. So if you have an eye that is critical, maybe you better put a patch over it. Or whatever. Now we also find that the eye is just evil in its purpose. Yeah, it roves. and it has evil motives and evil intents. Here in Proverbs 23, Proverbs the 23rd chapter, verses 5 through 7. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? Well, now, how in the world can you do that? How can you set your eyes upon that which is not? It's what you perceive. But God says it just ain't there. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye. That is, an eye that is motivated for self-aggrandizement and selfish gain. Don't eat the bread of him that is heartless and cruel, that has an eye for his own selfish gain. That's a command. Just say, no thanks. I'd rather have the bread that God has given to me because of the gratuity of heart and a self-sacrificing nature. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. See, the eye then is oriented on the basis of what a man thinks in his heart. If we have bad hearts, then how can you have good eyesight? Because we have evil motives, evil purposes. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. And God says that we must be absolutely open and honest, right-spirited, and we have no calculated intents or purposes. We have no evil motivations. We intend in no way to extract or to take advantage of. We're not seeking opportunity. Opportunities, if they are afforded, are also given to others. We take no advantages. That's hard. But it is absolutely a requirement. Proverbs 28 and verse 22. Proverbs 28 and noticing verse 22. He that hasteneth to be rich hath an evil eye. Now there's one primary example. If we have a bad orientation, and he hastens to be rich, he has an evil eye. Because he's going to take every advantage. Or as it is explained elsewhere in the book of Proverbs, have you noted that man who is liberal with his considerations for others and yet grows fat? And have you seen the one who closes his hand and yet grows in penury? He loses. There are principles involved. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. The eye is interpreted by what proceeds from the heart. The visions that we see, the images that are conjured up, are interpreted by hearts and brains, minds. What do we see? 2 Peter 2 and verse 14. 2 Peter 2 and noting verse 14, having eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin. Eyes that are full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin. Those are pretty evil eyes. What do we see? What we see, brethren, is interpreted in what proceeds from the mouth. I need not necessarily have a scroll, a videotape, what you receive upon the tables of your minds and of your hearts. All I have to do is listen to what proceeds from your lips. Because what you see with those eyes is interpreted by the mind and by the heart and is spoken by the lips. Evil is the basic characteristic of the human eye. He did not qualify it by saying some, it is the characteristic of every human eye. And we must all come to recognize it. The eye also is rebellious in nature. In Proverbs 30 and verse 17, Proverbs 30 and noting verse 17, the eye that mocketh at his father . How many children, not knowing or realizing it, because they're carnal, they're born as flesh entities. How many, when they think the parents' backs are turned, will either manifest a grimace to make them appear acceptable in the sight of their peers, or they will go to somebody else and say some clever mocking statement? Yes, the eye is evil. It's rebellious. The eye that mocketh at his father and despises to obey his mother. That is of the child that manifests a disgruntled spirit, a contemptuous attitude, and usually before peers, or in other ways, if it needs to justify its own whimsical rebellion. The eye that mocketh at his father and despises to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out. Does it mean literally the ravens are going to come? No. It means in due time there's a price to be paid. And it's a terrible price. A horrendous price. We can all laugh and jeer at the law of inertia or the laws of inertia, thermodynamics, and gravitation if we want to. But most people, since they are a reality of life, will not challenge them. You don't see too many children deliberately defying the law of gravity because its results are visible. They can be seen. But we have myriads of people, as a matter of fact, the whole of humankind, that jeers and mocks at the spiritual laws of God, but they are even more effective than those laws of this physical realm. And so the children who mock and deride their parents with an evil eye will pay the price. It is as inevitable as the law of gravity. I don't mean some black raven is going to show up now and pluck the eye out, and because it didn't happen, you say, ha-ha, I got by. No. The Bible is written in colorful language. But just as surely as the raven would do that literally, and have been known to do it in children, so also the spiritual law will take its toll. In whatever ways. It's inevitable. Deuteronomy 12 and verse 8. Deuteronomy 12. And noting verse 8. You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day. Every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. The one thing that we, as the called of God, should have learned long ago is the last person on the face of the earth to trust is the self. And yet it's the most difficult to deny. The last person in the world to trust is the self. Do I make that point clear? Like many people have said, and they have done it quite frequently, well, you're doing what you think is right. And I said, no, I'm not doing what I think is right at all. The one thing I determined is what we were taught. I didn't think it out. I got it by the same means that all of you did. I was taught that way of life. And that has become the common ground, and it is a ground that we will not deviate from. But I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, that was just his view. Well, I'm sure a lot of people said that about Moses, too. Well, Moses, I'm not so sure about you. That's your personal view. And Moses could have stood there and thundered from morning till evening saying, no, God gave it to me directly. Yeah, tell me about it. We either must come to believe and to understand that God Almighty gave to us in the last days that message, or why don't we just be honest and say, I don't believe any of it. If we're going to make choice, we're already hopelessly lost. Hopelessly lost. Because what you're doing is determining the standard then. And we must come to the point that we believe what God Almighty gave to us. I don't mean what human beings did. I said what was given to us. And we act on that with implicit faith and with a determination that will see us through. You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day. Every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. The eyes amazingly look at things and interpret them on the basis of what the heart dictates. Now, are you sure of all the judgments you've rendered about others? Or do you suppose that maybe you didn't quite get all the facts? Or maybe your view was tarnished by your own personal views? Could it be? We must have a standard, and that standard has been given to us. If we don't have that standard, we don't have anything. And it is that standard that's going to see us through. Moses had weaknesses, many of them. And so did God's servant in the last days. But those weaknesses must not become the basis of your determination of what truth is. That truth was given, and so God said, that truth was given to us in the last days, and we will hang on to it. In toto, completely. Now, we have the option. We can decide in our own eyes what we want, or we can will to be obedient to it and make those eyes obedient. The seventh point now with regard to the eyes is that it's unsatisfied in purpose. An eye that is never satisfied. In Ecclesiastes 1:8, Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, noticing verse 8, all things are full of labor, man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing. There is always a yearning for getting a hold of something else. Now, just like it's never satisfied with, if you see something beautiful, you just can't get enough of it. Now, there's not a problem there. Seeing beautiful things is a marvelous thing. But after all, you do exactly the same thing. That is, human beings do exactly the same things when they're bad. The eye is never satisfied. And if it's an evil eye, as we are told it is, then it's never satisfied with a knowledge of evil. Bad things, interpreted from our own hearts and our own minds. So the eye is an unsatisfied organ, always wanting to get a hold of something else, either for good or for bad. In 1 John 2 and verse 16, 1 John 2, and noting verse 16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, you know, there is a sensitivity to the flesh, the feel, the fact that you just want to feel things. The satisfaction of the flesh and the lust of the eyes. Sure, the eyes also evidence lust. Unsatisfied. They want more and more and more. The eyes are never filled. All right, next. What about those feet that carry you around? You know, it's amazing what those feet will do for you or how they can undo you. It's an amazing design of God that He put us upon our two feet, stood us up, and required that we be ambulatory. That is, we could get around. And so we can get from place to place. And so God gave us two feet and made us ambulatory with eyes with which to see so that we could fill them with all the filth and the vileness of the world. And we could go to one extreme to another, from one place to another, to take in all the sordid nonsense of this world. That's the purpose for two feet. What about those two carnal appendages? And they are carnal. Those feet can get you into an awful lot of trouble. And I mean an awful lot of trouble. But I'm not going to get into what they're really for yet, because that's coming. See, God gave us all these organs and these members of our bodies. But He gave them to us for a purpose, and then He gave us a choice. So we're going to see how to rightly use them later on. But let's see what the natural is like. Here in Psalm 73 and verse 2, Psalm 73, in verse 2 it says, "But as for me, my feet were almost gone." What did they do? Rot off? No, that's not what he's talking about. "My feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped." He had found that because of unique problems and turmoils and difficulties and so on, that he had almost lost orientation with God. He almost forgot to attend the convocations. He almost forgot that God ordained certain days holy. And he said, "I intend for you to convoke before me." My feet had well nigh slipped. The first usage for those feet is not the care of the physical body. First responsibility is obedience to God. If we have the strength and the capability for the care of the physical body or to do the things that we want to physically, then we have sufficient to serve God. It is my hope and my prayer that when I have to make a choice between whether I'll serve the needs of this physical body or I will convoke before God, that I will choose the latter. It's my will now. My feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped, for I was envious at the foolish. He allowed fools out here to disrupt him. I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. We can't let that happen to us. We all must grow. We all must master. That's why I have willed with everything that's within me. When I have had headaches that you will never know. And I have sat here and preached. I never found myself worse. I always found myself better when it was all over. Have our feet, have we controlled them? Do we use them acceptably, rightly? All right, let's notice that our natural feet also carry us to evil objectives. Here in Proverbs 1 and verse 16, Proverbs 1 and verse 16, "For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood." Now, how in the world, we don't necessarily have to go out literally to take the life of somebody. God says that even evil communication, or hate as it is defined, is murder. If our feet quickly take us to tell the tale of somebody else, we are murderers. We are running to evil. God doesn't want us to do that. That's as plain a statement as I can make. Proverbs 6, verses 12 through 14, and then verse 18. A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. Now, all of you have seen people walk with their lips, haven't you? That's quite a feat. This one's spelled F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. I didn't intend a pun there, but I guess that's the way it turned out. But here, God, now, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, inspired them and said that there are men who walk with their mouths. A naughty person, that is one with a bad motivation. A wicked man, just another expression for the same thing, walks with a froward mouth. When we have a wrong motivation of heart and mind, when we move from one place to another among our circles or wherever we're going, we do it with an evil, nefarious purpose. And that is bad. He winketh with his eyes. Don't think anything of it. Downplays it. A contemptuous spirit and attitude. I didn't read this one particularly. You know you have to make choice. Otherwise, we would have spent weeks on eyes alone. He speaks with his feet. Now, you want a real crowd, just start talking with your feet. What does it mean? Just observe where they go. Well, no, I shouldn't say that, because I don't want you to observe where they're going. Otherwise, that makes you have an evil eye. But God says, because God will observe and judge on that basis, all you have to do is see where they're going and to whom they're going. And you can evaluate. He speaks with his feet. He teaches with his fingers. You know, let me illustrate it, you know, by the executive that has to doodle. You know, they have doodling pads. That's because, and I think most people that get into that condition have to have that. You know, I've got to have one too, you know. Because as I'm talking, you know, you're always drawing little figures or doing something. Well, I don't know what those little figures represent. I've never been able to figure it out, but they must mean something. Any of you ever do that? You know, you draw little crosses, or you'll draw little round circles, or you draw something, you know, but you can't even talk if you don't have a pencil in your hand. So a naughty person then, or a wicked individual, walks with a froward mouth, he winks with bad eyes, and he speaks with his feet, and he teaches with his fingers. Now that's quite a unique individual. That's just a very unique individual. But did you know that all of you are doing it? So maybe it isn't nearly as unique as we thought. We all do it. Now let's hope that we're not the naughty ones, but that we are using those organs and appendages acceptably in the sight of God. But we're still going to do it. It's only a matter of orientation. Let's notice now, oh no, pardon me, we left out a little here. Frowardness is in his heart. Now there's another one of them. Frowardness is in his heart. He devises mischief continually. He soweth discord. If there is a model text, an exemplary text, in all that I have to say in this long series, it's right here in Proverbs 6, 12 through 14. Remember it. Now noting verse 18. An heart that devises a wicked imaginations. Well, let's pick up the rest of it. Verse 15 says, therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. These six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look. That means our countenance is anything but humble and contrite. Arrogance of expression. What is the expression except the facial features and the eyes? That's your countenance. In the book of Isaiah, it's called haughty arrogance. What is it in the second chapter of used over and over and over in whichever it is, first, second, or third chapter of Isaiah? A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked imaginations. Now we're back to this carnal self, this natural self. And heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief. Feet that are swift in running to mischief. A false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. Six things that God hates. You'd think if we knew that God hated these things, we'd do our level best to avoid them. And yet they are awfully hard to overcome. Another characteristic, we have just a few minutes here. I want to get the last of this concerning the natural feet. The natural feet carry out plans without sufficient forethought. They carry out plans without stopping to think. They're charged emotionally. We get up and run to it. We never stop and say, well, wait a minute. No, let me think this thing through first. In Proverbs 19, 1 through 3, Proverbs 19, 1 through 3, better is the poor that walketh in his integrity. That he walks in honesty and integrity. Than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool. Also that the soul be without knowledge. It is not good, and he that hasteneth with his feet sinneth. He that hasteneth with his feet, that is, he does not allow sufficient time to think an issue through. He is impelled by emotions. He wants to be first. He's got to say it, or whatever it is. What he says is that he sins with his own feet. If his feet could not carry him there, he would never have been able to commit the sin. So there is a problem with feet. The foolishness of man perverteth his way. You pursue a way by your feet. You walk in a path. The foolishness of man, and that's bound up in hearts, perverteth his way, and his heart fretteth against the Lord. And how many of us, when things don't go the way we want them, do literally fret against God? Rather than to accept the onus of our own responsibility, we fret against God. And the only safe course is to say, I may not understand it, but I know my state is my problem. One final text. Natural feet, as we have seen with both the ears and the eyes, are uncircumcised. So we find that all of our physical organs and the members of our bodies are uncircumcised. So now we find the feet are. John 13 and verse 10. John 13 and verse 10. Jesus said unto him, He that is washed needeth not to save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and you are clean, but not all. If we just get the feet taken care of, Christ said that was all that was necessary. The feet then are foundational. They're motivating. They transport. The feet can either carry us to good or they carry us into every conceivable area of doubt and misgiving, evil and wrongdoing. Circumcise the feet and you're well on the way, said Christ. Next time, we're going to get into the natural hands, and then from there to the natural heart, and so on.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented What is the Natural Body? This was the number 3 tape in this series, and it was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.